These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert!
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
I felt nauseous with just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking.
And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Hello and welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris and Ryan, I am Mike. We are without Sam this week. Unfortunately, he was not available. Oddly enough, we thought Ryan would be the one who wouldn't join us for this podcast, but you did a switcheroo on us, Ryan. You got rid of Sam. I don't know what you did, but you found a way to stay on the pod.
That's right, droid heads. I am cutthroat and I'm still standing.
That's right. You had the last remaining torch.
Yeah, I really pulled the Star Trek card. I said, Sam, if you love Star Trek so much, why don't you get out of here?
He got in the spaceship and left.
In this edition of the pod, we will be talking about our New Hope rewatch part 2. We're going to get to that in a moment. But first off, Star Wars Battlefront 2 was released this past week. There was some controversy surrounding it, but we're going to focus on the campaign, the story mode. And Ryan, I'm going to toss it to you and kind of let you lead us into this conversation, because I know you're really excited about what the game brought in this new edition and to talk about some of the revelations in it.
Yeah, so to anyone who came to this podcast hoping to hear about microtransactions, I'm sorry, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
But how much does Darth Vader cost?
A million hours of gameplay. So moving into this, Mike and I have both completed the campaign. Chris, you're going to be playing the very interested observer. Mm-hmm. And also, we should just give a little bit of a disclaimer here. There are going to be spoilers. We're talking about the campaign in full. And there are potential spoilers. So maybe we could put a time code kind of in the description to let you know to kind of skip to the New Hope. And you can come back and listen when you've completed the campaign. Anyway, I really, really like the campaign. You play primarily as Iden Versio, who is an Imperial Special Forces agent on a thing called Inferno Squad. And the timeline of the story takes place after the Battle of Endor, which is episode 6, Return of the Jedi, up until pretty significantly right before The Force Awakens, it seems. You play the last mission as Kylo Ren, which was a huge surprise for me.
Me too.
So it kind of follows Iden and her, who ends up being her lover, Del, through their kind of defecting from the Empire when they're kind of a little disenfranchised from what the Empire is doing, when she's ordered to order an assault on her home planet. So that's kind of the meat of the story. Throughout it, you also play as a bunch of different characters. I really loved it, and we put up a gameplay video of me playing some of the dogfights, so you can kind of see what it looks like, and I talk a little bit about this, but excuse me, my voice just cracked like I was going through puberty. Wow, nostalgia, guys.
Wow.
But to me, the whole thing felt like a perfect kind of extended universe story. It felt to me like reading an extended universe novel in the 90s, like those like Young Jedi Knights things or things like that, where you hear about these kind of missions that these characters did that we never saw. So that was really, really charming to me.
This very much falls in line with kind of the new mission statement of just having every piece of media, every piece of content kind of push the same narrative along.
Yeah, and depending on how much misdirect they're doing with this, it could be some significant reveals in this that would be very pertinent to The Last Jedi potentially raise lineage, honestly.
Oh, interesting. So these could...
We should just get into that. Those two major things. I mean, Ryan, they really stand out. I think they're the biggest conversation points, and we can go into a little bit more of the other gameplay aspects. But what really struck me leaving it was that there could possibly be ramifications that go throughout the entire Star Wars universe.
Yeah, well, just to kind of give a little background, at the end, Kylo Ren comes across Del later on. It says decades later, after what is the Battle of Jakku. So we see kind of the the creation of that Star Destroyer graveyard that we see in The Force Awakens, which I thought was really interesting because it was one of those things that's just kind of like a throwaway shot. It's just kind of to give scope. Mm-hmm. And in classic Star Wars extended universe fashion, someone made an entire story about just that one thing, which I really, really loved. But then decades later, Kylo Ren finds Del kind of in a hideout on this planet called Pilio, which is earlier in the campaign, you're playing as Luke Skywalker, who meets Del and kind of changes his mind about the Empire and kind of what the nature of evil and things like that. And Kylo, we play as Kylo inside Del's mind as Kylo's trying to get information from him. And he basically makes reference. He says, "You've gone soft ever since you and Iden had a daughter." So we know that Kylo is trying to get information from this guy, and we know that he's referencing a daughter that they had. Now, whether they're trying to give that information away in a video game a month before the release of a film, I don't know. Or if they're just, you know, saying that this isn't the most important thing, this is the facts, or like these are the facts. It could work either way, honestly. It would be a huge misdirect, but maybe that's what they're interested in doing. Mike, what do you think?
I don't mind them doing that, even if it is a huge misdirect, because why not play on what we're all interested in knowing at this moment in the franchise? I think that, in my opinion, I don't believe that will be the case. They do say when Del is talking with Agent Hask, who has come back from the dead somehow because we thought that we had killed him in Jakku during the game, there's a moment where Iden and Hask have a showdown on Iden is now flying an X-Wing in the Battle of Jakku versus Task in one of the TIE fighters, or Hask, I mean. And it is the conversation between Hask and Del where he says, "Don't go after her. It won't end well for you." That's Del's comment to Hask. And he says his daughter's name is Gideon. And possibly, you know, Rey, having lost her parents so early in her life, having been deserted so early, maybe her name is something different. But I think right now, why not play on something that people are so intrigued by and allow them to speculate, allow them to put out some theories, and be excited that maybe they got some bit of news that wouldn't be available to the average fan, even if in the end that's not the case. I still think it's an enjoyable thing to do in a game, and really could possibly pay off in a big way, but more than anything, just gives you an experience that allows you to be more excited about some of the theories and speculation, which is such a big part of being a fan of a franchise like this.
Absolutely, and another thing that Del says to Hask in that conversation, he says something about how Iden tried to kill him, and Hask says, "Iden can apparently do anything except kill me," which kind of implies that she may be very force sensitive, which would also play into the Rey thing.
Which was my question, wondering if you do this and you have the reveal that the two of them are the parents of Rey, and we didn't get much of a sense that they had a force awareness or force ability, but you're right. I didn't really consider that that could have been something to do with Iden having some force ability, and then that works a little bit better into that lineage, because my initial reaction was, how could you tell a story where someone is so powerful with the force, but yet their parents, who we knew, didn't show any signs?
I also think it's interesting. I was thinking about what if, so say they're playing this completely straight and that these are actually Rey's parents, right?
Yeah.
And say you didn't play the video game and you go see The Last Jedi. This, I could see a scene, you know, where she's asking Luke about her parents and he says, "Your father was a soldier. I met him after the Battle of Endor."
Oh, yeah.
"And your mother was an Imperial fighter and they both defected." You know, like, it would be an affecting story either way, mm-hmm. whether you played this video game or not. I actually think I would be perfectly satisfied if this was actually the answer to Rey's lineage and they just gave it away this early. I'd be fine with that.
Did you get enough from these characters in this story to make that feel rewarding to you?
I mean, so that depends on how much we've all put all this stock into Rey's lineage, you know, just because it's a mystery. But If there hadn't been a mystery around it, like, how interested would we actually be in it? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like any answer could be satisfying. It seems at this point that people believe that she could either be a Kenobi or a Skywalker, and anything else would just be like a complete curveball.
Yeah.
There's a sports reference for anybody out there listening. But I'd be satisfied kind of with whatever they do. I'm not banking on her being anything in particular.
Well, Ryan, that kind of brings up the thought to me is maybe the reason why the casting not necessarily a very well-known actress, but I thought a very accomplished actress in what she's done so far. And I'm going to mispronounce her last name, but Janina Gavankar, who was part of True Blood, is playing Iden Versio. And maybe they want somebody they think could also make the transition from the video game world to the big screen. And even if it is for some sort of flashback scene, or is could she be aged? And then they do find a way to get Rey back to Iden Versio, if that is the case. I kind of think that those two voice actors and potentially on-screen actors could do the job. They're both very capable.
That is really interesting. I wasn't familiar with the actress at all. I thought that whoever did it was great. Yeah. But that's a really interesting point. I didn't even think of that. I did think about, I was looking at both the characters being like, if those two characters were combined, would it equal Rey? You know, like that kind of thing. And the answer could be yes. But again, Lucasfilm is in such control of these kinds of things. Obviously, I know that Lucasfilm didn't make the game, but obviously they're very involved.
Yeah. The story group, I'm sure, had something to do with this.
Sure. And everything has to be checked with the Keeper of the Holocron, everything. Mm-hmm. If they're misdirecting, they're doing it in a very mannered way. And if they're not, then that was a really, you know, bold move on their part.
Oh, without a doubt. I just think, again, that people, they're not going to be too upset because it's not like it's so clear. It's not set up to be, this right. is definitely Rey's parents. They're going to think, all right, well, it was a red herring. That's fine. It took me for a moment, and I was allowed to speculate, but I don't think they'd be too angry in the end.
And honestly, there's been so many things of like, they gave this away, but then we found out they weren't giving it away, and then mm-hmm. they misdirected here, but they weren't misdirected. There's no way to gain your bearings with this stuff. Like, we don't know. We just don't know. The other thing that I'm sure you thought was a big reveal, and maybe you have other things as well, but for me was the project that they're talking about at the end.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
Campaign.
My other one was actually Luke on Pilio and the compass that he takes from the Emperor's Observatory. Yes. That was the one that, because I did wonder, kind of even just looking at it again, because when I finished the game, I was like, okay, I want to go back and look at some of the details. So sure. I watched the cutscenes again. Not all of them, but a few of the important ones. And I wondered that at the end, and I'm like, what is this project? I mean, they're training. I can't remember the character's name that they needed to rescue, who was in charge of training some of the Imperial forces that they wanted to keep working with. And Hask was saying that he needed her to do that. So what is that right. project? That's a good thing to bring up.
Yeah, I believe they called it Project Resurrection.
Okay.
Which to me just kind of perked my ears up because there's been a lot of talk and analysis about Snoke and his scars specifically.
Oh, yeah.
They're very similar to Anakin's scars mm-hmm. at the end of Return of the Jedi. Specifically, there's this really big gash on the side of his head.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a theory going around that perhaps Darth Plagueis is involved in terms of resurrecting people from the dead. I always thought this was far-fetched until I saw this. But they referenced this resurrection thing. And the thought came into my head that perhaps there is something to the resurrection of Anakin, perhaps being possessed by a different force power or something like that. I understand that we can never get the details from this alone, but did make that theory a little more legitimate to me.
Interesting. I had not considered it. I wonder how that would feel. Would that in any way undercut the ending then? You know, you have that moment of him in Return of the Jedi where he does at least redeem himself in the eyes of Luke and us as an audience member. And if he is brought back, but maybe he's brought back in a way that he's not even fully in control of what he's doing.
Right. It could legitimately just be his body being brought back, because I know that this is a controversial thing and I'm bringing up the prequels again. But with midichlorians being canon, right, it's something that's found in the blood. It's not necessarily something
if you use his body, you could be using the most powerful individual person in terms of midichlorians and have access to his blood if you can somehow get his blood flowing again.
Exactly.
Without even his personality, you could still have someone who could do so much damage or control so much of the galaxy.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. And I understand for like a general audience, this could be very convoluted, but if we're not talking about it, what are we doing here, Mike?
It's the whole point of the pod. I really hadn't considered it. The thing that stood out to me, but when you bring that up in terms of how it could impact the rest of the series, that's way more important than Luke finding a compass in the observatory.
That ties into The Force Awakens.
Yeah, it does.
Directly, which is cool.
And I think you assume that that's how he found Octo. I guess I'm taking a leap with that.
I think that probably is exactly how he found Octo.
And as you said at the end in the kind of epilogue where we find out about Del and his daughter and Aiden's daughter, we also know that that's how Kylo Ren found out about the map to Luke Skywalker and where it would be and where he could find. And I'm forgetting the name of the character at the very beginning of The Force Awakens. But that's where he got that information.
Are you talking about the Max von Sydow character?
Yes, the Max von Sydow.
They refer
character.
To him as the Vicar, I believe.
Okay.
V-I-C-A-R. And that's what it is on, like, in the credits.
And that's a pretty big moment as well to know that that's how he got to him, was to be able to get that information from Del and rewarding to play the game and say, hey, I have some more information that I wouldn't have had otherwise, and I'm a Star Wars fan who's more in tune with maybe someone who's only watching the stories in the films.
Yeah, and I thought, and again, going back to this extended universe thing, the kind of magic of seeing, you know, we play as Leia, Han, and Lando, and Luke at some points in the game, and seeing the characters go on kind of adventures and, like, you know, like heists and things like that that we haven't seen before gave that really magical feeling of, like, oh, these characters have a life outside of the movies that I've seen.
Yep.
You know, it just expands the universe even more. And that's always great as a Star Wars fan. We have insatiable appetites when it comes to these things. So we'll take this as long as we can.
Well, and this is something that maybe can continue to have to satiate our appetite for these original trilogy characters, especially as the films will phase them out eventually due to storyline or just time. We know they won't be in it anymore, and we can continue to play games and play as these characters we've loved. Now, I do want to ask you, was it at all, not jarring, but just kind of take you out of it a little bit, listening to some of our iconic characters not voiced by the actors we know and love? Now, obviously, that wasn't an option for Carrie Fisher, but with Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill still being able to do the voices, I believe it was Billy Dee Williams. I think he was the one who did come back and do the voice of Lando, but otherwise it wasn't. And they didn't bother me as much as listening to Kylo not be Kylo was something that took me out of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure who did the voices for each, but I thought that the voices, you know, it takes a little bit. I'm surprised they didn't get Mark Hamill, knowing that he does so much voice work.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not surprised that they didn't get Harrison Ford. but I thought the voices were a little off. I was willing to kind of accept that, the way that we accept when there's like a cartoon version, you know, like the Ghostbusters cartoon. It wasn't them doing the voices. You kind of accept it. The one thing I thought was really impressive, especially with Han, is how well they got the inflections and mannerisms down.
I thought that was really
impressive from an animation standpoint.
I thought the animation overall in it was really beautiful, and especially, you know, the scenes, as you said, I think it was in the video that you posted of your gameplay on Battlefront you could find on YouTube. I thought you were talking about just the way this is so perfectly designed to fit within the original trilogy and play us into The Force Awakens. I was really impressed because it just felt very cinematic in all aspects. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, as a Star Wars fan, I would recommend this game highly, because as a Star Wars fan, I found it to be an incredibly satisfying experience.
I do want to ask you, do you have any nitpicks? What are some of the little things you would maybe want to change, improve on, make any big alterations?
Sure. You know, aside from the microtransactions.
yes.
I did think the campaign was a little short.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I think it plays around 4 to 5 hours. I kind of blew right through it, like within like 2 days.
Yep.
It felt a little short. I know that the bulk of this game is kind of supposed to be the multiplayer. But in terms of nitpicks, the flying takes a little bit to get used to control wise.
I thought,
and part of the charm of the extended universe thing is also kind of a detriment from a narrative standpoint, because the game does feel a little disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they're trying to, like, check a lot of boxes in terms of what they're allowing you to do in a Star Wars game, which from a story standpoint is kind of disjointed, but from an experience standpoint, I appreciated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they make sure that you fly X-Wings and TIE Fighters and the Millennium Falcon, and you play with lightsabers and blasters, and is Leia, Han, Luke, and Lando, like that kind of thing. And it doesn't always mesh perfectly, but each time it happened, I was excited to do it.
The greatest desire of a Star Wars video gamer in every single level of this game. They hit on it all, as you just said.
Yeah.
They let you, you know, control an AT-AT and AT-ST. You really get to experience it. And the only thing you don't get in this game is Darth Vader, but you had that in Battlefront 1.
Yeah, so I thought it was immensely satisfying. Again, when you look at it for, like, the sum of its parts, it is a little disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's forgivable to me.
How did you feel about, as you said, the disenfranchisement of Iden and Del from the Empire? I kind of thought that, yes, it's their own planet of Vardos being destroyed by Iden's father, the Admiral Versio. But I thought that their reaction to that was surprising, because you'd think by that point they'd been in the Empire long enough to accept some of the atrocities committed by the Empire. I mean, you can't be part of Inferno Squad without being part of that. And you'd think back to, all right, well, if it's Alderaan, we're fine with innocents being killed. But if it's our own planet, that's what really draws the line. I kind of couldn't get past that, as I thought that, all right, I don't know if they're actually redeemable. And yet that was what we were going with in the story.
Yeah, now that you say it like that, I understand where you're coming from. When I was experiencing in the game, I was appreciating that they were giving kind of an empathy to the people in the Empire that thought that the Empire was just providing order. You know, we've always been presented with the viewpoint of the rebellion, which is that the Empire is evil, which obviously they are. But I thought that they, for a video game especially, and I don't mean that in a diminutive sense, but like, I thought they did a somewhat nuanced thing. What I really liked was how it played into, and this is in The Force Awakens also with Finn, it played into the idea of them being redeemed and being welcomed by the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's like a nice thing to put forth, that, you know, they were misled by the Empire. And the rebellion doesn't turn them away because of that.
And it was nice to experience that and see it as more of a hopeful, as you would expect from the rebellion, kind of approach, is that anybody could be redeemed. Anybody could have a second chance. And that was important to continue to play the game that way. I think, you know, the reason that stood out to me is one of the things I said early on in the podcast when Chris and I were talking about our experiences of old Star Wars video games, is that I always had trouble in KOTAR, Knights of the Old Republic, playing on the side of the Empire or the dark side. I couldn't be evil. So early on, when you're knocking off some of the resistance or the rebellion on Endor, it just felt odd. And it took me a while to get used to that. And then, you know,
did you accidentally shoot any stormtroopers? Because I did.
Yes, I did. Really? That was the first thing, the way I started. I'm like, oh, whoops, that's not right. That's my days of Dark Forces are still in my head somehow.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, I kind of, once they made the change, it was more acceptable in that way. And so I didn't have to worry about feeling bad anymore. And I could get back to shooting the stormtroopers. And blasting stormtroopers never gets old.
I was saying this to my wife, there's something so satisfying about blasting stormtroopers in a video game.
There is. I actually think that even though I'm done with the campaign, I'll play online, but I'll also maybe go back to some of the different levels and just play again so I can blast the stormtroopers, because it is
fun. I've replayed a few already. Online is fun, but I just get demolished.
Yeah, you know what? Usually I can get into those and get demolished for about a day and a half, and then I can hold my own. But it's been a while, and as I've said multiple times on the show, I really like the single-player story mode as a much more important thing. Otherwise, I mean, I feel
right now, us doing this podcast, you know, whatever the hour it takes us, the entire world is getting better at this game but us.
You're right. I don't think I can go into it. Maybe I'll give it a shot after the holiday, because I'll spend the entire holiday. I won't talk to any family members, just getting ready, and then I'll go from the arcade mode back into the multiplayer.
There you go.
I think this is a time where we can finally welcome back in Chris, because Chris decided as we started this conversation that he did not want to have any spoilers before Battlefront 2, and we will hope that we can get Chris back here in a moment, because I guess I get it, because I understand not being spoiled, but it was kind of funny that we lost him in the middle of that, Ryan.
He ended up not playing the part of the interested observer.
I think that's about Chris. That seems about right. I will defend him in that I am now staying away from all forms of new media leading up to The Last Jedi in terms of new content being created. I don't know if you saw that Entertainment Weekly has a cover story on The Last Jedi this week. And typically that's something we would discuss in depth here on the podcast. I don't think we're going to do that. There's Chris. Chris, we've got you back. And we're talking about...
I've come back. You know what? We talked about it a little bit before, and I thought I was okay. And then I started hearing this stuff. I got excited. I bought the game. It's okay. I tapped out. I'm excited to listen to this after. I hope it's
Hey, man, we all need to know our limits. You know what I mean?
Well, Chris, this is a good time for us to welcome you back and welcome back the other listeners who also didn't want to be spoiled, who have not played the game. So we're going to get back into our conversation about New Hope. We do want to say if you could follow us on Twitter, Facebook, that'd be the Droids Pod, Droids Podcast, and then Instagram, Droids Pod. And then if you don't mind leaving us a review, rating us on iTunes, it all helps us out to do even more interesting and fun things on the podcast. Send us an email at droidspod@gmail.com. But Chris, we were talking briefly about there is a new Entertainment Weekly cover story about The Last Jedi. And typically on the podcast, we go through the details of some of those stories. We're too close now to The Last Jedi for me to read that article. We could do another version where maybe, you know, Ryan and Chris, if you want to talk about it, you could do that and I'll be the one who goes into dark mode.
I like this idea. We're just going to have like a bunch of separate versions of the podcast.
Well, let me tell you why. Because when I read, or I held off in 2008 before The Dark Knight, I didn't want to read the cover story about The Dark Knight in Entertainment Weekly in case there was some spoiler that was going to ruin my experience. The first paragraph gave away the pencil joke from the Joker in Entertainment Weekly. And I was like, all right, good. I made the right decision, and I'm going to go forward with that again here in the next month.
Right.
And I'll read that article after the movie comes out.
That's a fair stance to have. I myself, I'm hesitant to watch the new TV spots. I really enjoyed the last one that I saw. I think it was like spot 6, maybe, is what we're at. But then after I watched it, I was like, okay, now I'm just seeing things that happen in the movie. I'd rather just let those be surprises.
It's interesting because I'm not concerned at all about spoilers in life at all.
Well,
if someone right now could tell me the entire plot of The Last Jedi, I would let them.
Really?
So somebody?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, somebody told you the plots of the prequels. Is this true? And you still enjoy? You're still like, this is great.
Yeah, a friend of mine, George, told me the plots, the prequels. He'd been telling me them for years. You know. And then when the prequels came, they were a little different than what he described. It was as if he had kind of the bare bones at one point of the spoilers and then just kind of hodgepodge some things together that worked beautifully.
Ryan, though, I want to know more. So why wouldn't that bother you? Why would you be okay?
Spoilers?
Just having someone relay the entire story to you without it being in the cinematic form. I mean, you don't want to experience it in the pure form of the way it was intended?
There's a few reasons. One of them it's a little heavy, guys, and here it comes.
Oh, all right.
And I'll knock on wood because I'm afraid to jinx myself. What if I die before December 15th? I want to know what would have happened.
That's
one thing.
I can respect
that point. That's a real concern of mine.
You're like, you want to know. You want to get it. All right, fair enough. I mean, you're still going to have the same reaction. So
sure. But the other thing is that I understand that we're preserving this experience that we're going to have essentially once, right? Because you can't have something spoiled again.
Right.
So we're trying to preserve this one magical experience that we're going to have. I tend to put a lot of anxiety and like pressure on that experience.
Sure.
So, but at the same time,
that's a very good point.
From a story standpoint, if it could be ruined by a spoiler, it really doesn't work anyway.
Oh,
so
wow.
I feel like if someone tells me a spoiler and then I watch the movie being like, oh, this is lame, I knew it, then it probably wasn't that great to begin with. So I'm not all that concerned about spoilers. However, I do want to maintain an experience for myself, you know, but I don't think for me specifically that it takes away from it that much. But that might just be because I'm so anxious to know what happens in these things that I just have like no willpower. The thought of like not watching any of the trailers is so like baffling to me.
Right.
I can't imagine doing it.
Just give it to me right now. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's like a willpower thing.
All
I respect people that are like, I'm not watching any of the trailers. I don't know how they do it.
The anxiety is the same for me. I also think I've done that multiple times where I'm like, am I going to make it to this movie? I'm so excited about it. Don't let something happen to me before that. I can't feel the same way, because if I heard some story bit and there was a spoiler that was given away, I think the entire movie I'd be waiting for it to happen, and it would just take me out of the experience of seeing it. And that's just the way my mind works, because not that I'm looking for the way it's going to be revealed to me in the story, but now that I know it, I'm almost... I have more nerves that they're not going to do it right. That, you know, if this has somehow been put out there and they haven't executed it well, versus if I'm just lost in the story, I'm not analyzing it the same way.
That's interesting. I find with these, with the Star Wars movies specifically, things that I'm so excited about. I've spoken before about how The Force Awakens broke me emotionally. The first time I'm watching it is generally kind of a wash, because all I'm thinking about is the fact that I'm watching it.
Yeah,
I'm not taking it in. I'm not assessing it on a critical level.
Yeah.
So in terms of spoilers and things, I feel like, and we're getting pretty deep into my psyche here, but I feel like I'm not experiencing it purely that time anyway.
It doesn't matter.
I'm just like so relieved.
Right. You're just getting through that first barrier and then you're into it. Wow.
Yeah. So whether I know or not what's going to happen, I'm not sure it's relevant.
That makes me wonder so much. We need to do two different versions of the pod following The Last Jedi. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of different podcasts where we're talking about it in different forms. But I think the initial one as well, I can't look at it critically. I always walk away with just a pure feeling. I have discussions with friends and we talk about it, but I need at least a second viewing before I can really hone in on some of the facts, if not three or four.
Yeah. We should do three versions of the pod. The first one, us about 2 hours before the movie.
Oh,
and
man.
You will hear a man in the middle of a breakdown.
Yeah, right. I'll be audibly shaking. You'll be able to hear that through the podcast.
All right. Well, with that in mind, let's return to the rewatch to get us ready for The Last Jedi. Part one of our New Hope discussion was last week. We talked about some of the different aspects of the talent that came together, our favorite scenes, favorite lines, as well as our experience of watching Star Wars for the first time. There's more to talk about. I think we, at the end of that podcast, after we were done recording, all of us said we could talk endlessly. We could just talk for 3 or 4 hours or more about A New Hope, and we're going to do that over the course of this podcast.
And that's what we're doing. Sit tight. We have three more hours.
I think as we talk a little bit more about it, we only hinted at some of the actors, you know, overall performances changing the way we saw what was possible in a movie, especially Harrison Ford. I don't think that either one of you got enough time, myself included, talking about Han Solo and just what Harrison Ford did with that role. So I want to open it up to start off talking about Ford, but then also Carrie Fisher after that, because I think we got a little bit more Mark Hamill in our last edition.
Mm-mm.
I mean, there's something... Harrison Ford in the 70s, I touched on this a little bit, but there was a certain je ne sais quoi happening with him that I could still argue has been unmatched. I mean, there's a specific behind the scenes thing that I've seen. I can't remember exactly, so I wish I could attribute it to something. But he was talking about how he sat down in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon for the first time when they were shooting A New Hope. And he said to the prop guys, he said, all right, like, how does it fly? And they were like, well, what do you mean? You just push this lever, you press this button. He said, no, like, what does everything do?
Right.
And they were like, we don't know.
I don't.
And he said, well, figure it out and let me know while they're setting up the shot. And then there's a shot of him from the set. There are prop guys looking absolutely panicked, like playing with levers and things as he's smoking a cigarette out the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And I think that's essentially Harrison Ford in a nutshell.
Yep, exactly.
I want to see this photo. The coolest guy in the room. I think we'll post a link to it. I've not seen that photo. Maybe
I'm not sure.
At some point,
I saw this on a behind the scenes thing on VH1 like 15 years ago. If someone can find it, please send it to us. That'd be amazing.
He's a good place to start with. Just before we dig too deep into it, I mean, I'm looking at this up now. I don't know this from memory. That would be weird. Kurt Russell, Nick Nolte, Sylvester Stallone, Bill Murray, Christopher Walken, Burt Reynolds, Jack Nicholson, Al Pacino, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, and Billy Dee Williams all went up for the role.
Bill Murray as Han
Solo. Murray.
Could you imagine Nick Nolte in this movie?
The angriest Han Solo of
all time. Oh my God.
Wow.
Well, I think they landed on the right choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I can sort of see Bill Murray, but it's still an entirely different movie. He can play Ernest, but not quite the...
And then, like, at that time...
I think the only reason I can picture Bill Murray is because I've seen him wear a vest.
Right.
But that's it.
That's the connection. That's the throughput. Yeah.
That's a different movie right there. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Steve Martin? That would be crazy.
It seems like this seems like one of the things that list is like these are actors that George Lucas thought of at a time.
right they might not have actually like gone into the audition.
Here's a list of actors that George Lucas knew existed in 1976.
He dropped a piece of paper. It may have been a magazine that had these actors' names.
Well, if you remember the documentary that's out there about the making of Star Wars, Harrison Ford was the guy who was reading all the lines to everybody else who was auditioning,
right?
So it was more if he was around and they knew he was great. But
he had this very specific place with those guys in the 70s, with like George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola and eventually Steven Spielberg, where he was just this dude that was kind of around.
Mm-hmm.
He appears in Apocalypse Now for like 5 minutes.
He was just building stuff. He must have just been nice to be around. He was probably like handy on set. Like, it's probably like, hey, how do you do this? I know I've got the right tools in my bag to fix this thing if you want. Like,
can I tell an interesting anecdote very quickly about his life as a carpenter?
Please.
My mom's uncle was living in Queens in, I think this was probably be in the 1970s, and they're having work on their house done. And they looked outside one day, and someone was just kind of like looking at the work, like walking around their yard. And they came outside, and it was Harrison Ford. And they were shooting down the street, and he saw that someone was doing carpentry work and just came to see it.
Wow. So he's like really into it.
He's kind of family.
Yeah, so you guys are, so he'll be on the pod next week.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him on the pod. I'm going to see him at Thanksgiving, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
He was really satisfied with the carpentry work they were doing, and now Uncle Harry comes to...
How many members of your family has he individually saved from, you know, serious peril? Because he's out there saving people on the road. We found out on Monday he saved a woman who drove off the road in California. Well, I think he helped her. I don't know if he saved her from immediate death, but
Harrison Ford, always a hero. That plane that he almost landed on top of, four members of my family were.
That's right.
So is that saving them? I don't know.
Right. I think we can safely say that he is a good addition to the Star Wars franchise.
Safely say he was the right choice.
He has certainly pulled his weight.
Right.
But I want to go back to the story you were just telling, Ryan, though, about him and asking about all the switches and what they do. I don't know if you heard that in Episode 7, when he came back, he had one request. That all of the toggle switches actually did stay in position, because they would turn the switches in the original trilogy and then they would slowly fall back down because they weren't real switches. So we requested that they would actually toggle, you know, into on and off positions to look like functioning switches.
How do you think he asked? Do you think he was just like, switches work this time?
Look, guys, this didn't work. Toggle them.
Yeah. Wow.
Apparently the props guy said, yeah, we have a bigger budget on this one.
We can make that happen for you. It's not $11 million.
We have a few extra dollars.
Well, okay, let's talk a little bit more about Carrie Fisher, because the thing that stood out to me, even rewatching it and always thinking of Carrie Fisher, is from a young age of watching her in that role, I never questioned whether or not women could be heroes or not, because I always thought that she was an example of one of my favorite heroes in the best movie that I'd ever seen.
Right. Yeah. I think at the time it was a bit of a, it was not the average role for women. That was definitely a conscious choice, I think, on George Lucas's part and on her part of how she commanded that role.
To be fair to her, though, George also had some moments a little bit later on in the trilogy. And apparently, I know because Carrie Fisher has recounted the story often about George saying they don't have underwear in space.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And, you know, so I mean, there were good things, there were bad things.
Right.
It's important to acknowledge that for the time, her character was out of the ordinary in terms of her agency and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we should talk about it like it's the epitome of progressiveness.
Oh, no.
In terms of
filmmaking. Right. It's one of the
Her commanding the scene and taking over when they're supposed to be rescuing her, and she's supposed to be the damsel in distress, and she's the one leading them out of trouble and into the garbage chute to save all of them. it just, that's better than a lot of what we continue to see even today. Really, we should have somebody other than three white guys right now talking about this.
Of course.
So maybe we'll get Sabrina back, but
I think the important thing to note is that Carrie Fisher is amazing in these movies. I mean, she's iconic. She's absolutely iconic in each one. And she really does give a very commanding presence throughout all of it, specifically in Empire Strikes Back, which of course we'll get to. But in this, she's like very poised and composed and amazing. Like, she really owns that character. I'm just hesitant to say, you know, I it's spoken a lot about how, what a figure she is. And I just think that, there's a long way to go from like Princess Leia in A New Hope, you know, in terms of like portrayal of strong women in film.
Yeah.
But you know, especially for 1977, that it's of note.
Right.
And she is incredible.
Right. And I mean, I think it kind of plays into a different track for the title of Princess. I think it also shows like this is a rebel army, right? The roles and the names and the titles and stuff, like things are a little different, right? So I think that is also like that kind of heightens her character a lot. She's like, what princess do you know in other like media or stories or anything that's like that hands on?
Yeah, and she is like a certifiable badass.
Right.
You know, when you like break down exactly, a lot of it has to do with aesthetic in terms of like what the problems are with, with these kind of things. It's like the George Lucas with the underwear thing and kind of like, you know, obviously later in like in Return of the Jedi, obviously we don't need to touch on that. But in terms of what she actually does in this story, like how she like stands up to like torture and like really, really intense interrogation. And things like that, and the way she like takes charge and like kind of like puts Han in his place and stuff like that. Especially for the time, it was certainly of note.
Did anybody
and a lot of
get
people talk about that?
Did anybody get in the rewatch a 2016 presidential debate vibe with Vader standing behind Leia as they're about to destroy Alderaan? Anybody else feel the same way that I did when I watched that?
Oh God, he does really creep up on her, doesn't he?
And he's kind of holding her too. But anyway, we've talked about primary characters. Is there an overlooked background character who you think is one of your favorites or was one of your favorites as a kid? Because we've talked about how the cantina has so many different options. Even on the Jawa's crawler, there are so many droids there. Mm-hmm. There's so much detail in this universe. Who's the character that doesn't get enough love? Or maybe for a lot of Star Wars fans, we may know who they are, but who really do you like?
I like a head-on-stick guy in the cantina.
Head-on-stick?
They never change it. Yeah, there's specifically, go back and watch it. There's a guy, his head's kind of shaped like a V, and it's clearly just head on a stick.
Right.
And they never changed it.
I mean, I got to go with Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Uncle Owen? Aunt Beru?
Once you see that movie once, and then when you see them again, you're like, oh no, you have no idea what's about to happen. It's the most gruesome scene in any Star Wars movie.
My dad made me close my eyes.
It's really bad. But you like see that, you're like, oh man, I know what's going to happen to you guys. Want some blue milk?
I have to say and his name is escaping me, but the first Imperial Admiral that gets choked by Vader, I think gives this like amazingly like scenery chewing performance.
Sure. Yeah.
I kind of love him. And the way he grabs his collar is really effective.
Yeah.
You know, we know of it now as force choking, but at the time they had to portray that something was happening.
Right. Yeah. Like we did not know at all what that was. That's interesting. The dynamic between kind of that, the round table and Vader, like that little area there is so fascinating to me. And also to note, and I don't know if this is intentional, but there's an empty seat at that table, and a lot of people suspect that it was Krennic's seat.
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
You don't think it was of the filmmaking style of the empty seat is where we're supposed to be positioned?
Interesting. I think at the time, but now it has since changed, because it was like it's Tarkin and then this empty chair.
Yeah,
We are the empty chair.
We
it's
are
really
the
a
empty
metaphor
chair.
For
we
the
are Krennic.
For the act of watching film.
Right, right, right. So I think that dynamic, though, when they're still questioning Vader, even though we saw him just like commandeer the ship, it's like, oh wait a second, is Vader not in charge? Who's in charge here?
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of seeing that slow progression into the Sith Lords, unnamed at that time. are, they're actually the ones that want to take over everything. This is just the Empire, as we know it, is kind of just pawns in the game.
It's interesting. Do you think, so in that scene, they say, like, your archaic religions,
yeah,
Vader. Do the people in the Empire, are they not aware that the Emperor is way into the Force?
That's why I think.
I don't mean to poke holes in
this. No, but I think that that is where, like, this is before some turning point happened that proved that, like, Vader and the Emperor are like, oh, they have commandeered all these weapons and all this stuff. I think the Senate, is it the Senate? Are they still around
at that point? I think the Imperial Senate is the last, dissolved at the right. end there. Because yeah, the last remnants of the old Republic are no yep. more is the line, I think.
Right, yeah. Because the Senate turns into the Empire, essentially. Right. Well, not the Senate specifically, but the Republic is transformed into the Empire, essentially.
Right. So I think we're seeing the last moments of that turn into the Empire as we know it.
Which, if we go off of this,
what else
as
does
being...
this guy have to do? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's like, if he can choke someone with his mind, why wasn't anyone else just, like, terrified of him?
Yeah, who's still like, yeah, but he's not really doing it.
Yeah, but he doesn't have all the votes on the board.
That guy was a plant.
Right. All right, there's one of them. Great.
I want to go back to you talking about Uncle Owen. He's not my choice, his kind of favorite background character, but in watching all of this again and thinking about the prequels, and as we talked about at the end of the prequels, kind of having that story in mind now watching this film again, does Uncle Owen have a bit of Jedi envy? Because the way he dresses is almost mimicking Obi-Wan and Anakin from the prequels.
That is true. Maybe he kept, like, Obi-Wan kept stopping by and he's like, hey, that guy's kind of cool. Maybe I'll start wearing that. Like, the next style. Day, Aunt Beru's like, what are you wearing?
He's trying to grow a beard.
Yeah.
It makes sense why he's so angry. He doesn't want Luke to be a part of it because he never could.
He could never be a Jedi. He
got
all
wrapped
up. I love
that backstory. That like a young Joel Edgerton, Uncle Owen, saw Anakin and Obi-Wan and was like, I could wear a cloak, a tunic like that.
I'm gonna pull a Chris right here.
I can't wear a tunic.
He's a pretty cool guy.
Pull a Chris and just say, was he stewing? Was he Beru stewing a bit? just pulling a Chris for you.
Oh god. He has like a lightsaber hilt that doesn't have any crystals in it.
Or he does that thing that everyone that's ever existed has done with the remote control where you try to pick it up. Like, he's just trying to pick up something on the table with the Force.
It's getting more and more angry.
This poor guy.
We've all done it. I'd also This is my main major question out of this movie is when they say he's a lot like his father, and she's like, and Uncle Owen's like, that's what I'm afraid of.
Luke's just not a farmer, Owen. He has too much of his father in him.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Do you think that was always the plan there, or do you think that, like, we still didn't know who his father was?
I think it was the plan.
Yeah, I would say it was the plan as well.
For certain.
Even the Obi-Wan scene was so, not telegraphed, but telegraphed in retrospect. That,
right.
you know, the way he describes Anakin Skywalker, he knows, and they knew it. I mean, there's has to be something that was given to Alec Guinness to inform that performance.
Yeah.
Chris, I have to just reference what you just did. You asked us what we thought. We gave our opinion, and then you said, but for certainty?
But for
which is like, no, this is what we think.
You don't have access to George Lucas's data brain.
I'm thinking more that, like, these two had knowledge that this kid's father was like the renowned murderous psychopath Darth Vader. And they were just like, and she flippantly says he has too much of his father in him.
See, that's why I don't think they would
All they know of this guy is that he showed up for a day, was like, where's my mother? And then killed all the sand people.
Yeah.
And she's like, he just has a little bit of his father in him. He's just a wandering guy.
That's my question. It's like, do they know that Darth Vader is his father? Because if that's the case, I feel like they would be like, they shouldn't even talk to anybody.
Are you implying that when A New Hope was written, that they thought that his father was just like some kind of like jerk?
I feel like the stakes would have been raised a little more if they're like, yeah, it's Darth Vader. Why is he here? His last name's Skywalker. Don't you think they should have changed the last name?
As opposed to if Uncle Owen was just like, I don't like your dad. He was kind of a show off.
Yeah. Like, Darth Vader, all he has to do is like look up online, like, oh, hey, there's a Skywalker here. I wonder if that's my son.
Didn't change his last name.
Yeah, they didn't change his last name.
That's why they can't. That's why they can't have changed Ray's name.
Right.
Because we found out they changed Ray's name, it throws the whole thing off.
Yeah,
the whole franchise.
Like changing names is an option.
Yeah. Like, in that universe, you can't do it. It's just like an unheard of. Oh, you know what? We should have done that in retrospect. We should have changed the last name.
So she is not like, Gideon. Yeah.
Right.
The bureaucracy of changing names in that world. Would be, how many planets do you have to go
years,
to?
It takes years and years and years.
I have one other character that I think gets overlooked a lot. Biggs. Because Biggs is cut out of the movie early on where he had all these scenes. He comes back in, has a moment. Great, Luke, you finally made it. You're part of the Rebel Alliance. And then he's killed. He's kind of like Poe Dameron if Poe died in The Force Awakens, escaping from the First Order early in the movie and didn't come back.
Oh, that's an interesting analogy. Yeah, he kind of is.
And I think that's he missed out.
I do have to say, and this guy got his moment in the sun in Rogue One. Red Leader, I believe it's Red Leader, the almost there.
Almost there.
They're right behind me.
Almost there.
Oh, yeah.
Almost there. Yeah, that, yeah. I will never forget that. Like, that delivery is burned into my brain. Also, Wedge Antilles is one of the most written about extended universe characters in the Star Wars universe.
And he's getting a spot in Rebels right now. He's a part of everything in Rebels.
They're Luke Skywalker's friends. That's why.
Is Porkins in this one? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
No. Oh, he is. Yeah, yeah.
Cover me, Porkins.
I'm right with you, Red 3.
Yeah, he gets blown up, doesn't
he? Yeah, his quick demise.
I can hold it.
Pull up!
No, I'm all right.
I do have to say I really do like that all of the X-Wing pilots just kind of look like someone's uncle. They all have like the 70s stash.
Yep, yep.
And they're like, it's not like all of them are in really good shape or anything. It kind of gives me hope.
It's a rebel army. They just had to get whoever they could get.
Yeah, it's not like getting hired at Abercrombie.
right. Also, each one of those rebel fighters has such a personality before you, like, just their name and how they look. Like, each one is unique. It's very bizarre.
Report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
They could have very easily just had them all look the same and not speak or like had a call sign.
Yeah, they're even like, it's strange because in Force Awakens, they're all like different. They're all like different like species and Greg Grunberg.
Right.
but for some reason, they're more distinct. In episode 4.
Right. Do we know if Greg Grunberg is coming back? Because he's JJ's lucky charm. Does that mean
he's
that he's
definitely
going to
be in episode 9?
Well, he'll be in episode 9, but is he in episode 8 is the question. I would imagine he will be.
Are you asking me if Greg Grunberg will definitely be the most distracting thing in episode 8? The answer is yes.
Oh, that's unless he wants to be on the pod and he can explain why he's not.
No, I love Greg Grunberg. I'm just saying that it's distracting to see him in a Star Wars movie.
Well, and the knowledge
that the
you have.
From NBC's Heroes?
And was that the pilot from Lost?
I was going to say the cheerleader save the world.
Speaking of
the Star Wars.
Disrespecting of some characters, it's been widely talked about. Chewbacca does not get a medal at the end of the film.
He does.
Chewbacca does not get a hug from Leia after Han's death.
Did you know?
Why is there no respect for the Wookiees and especially the greatest Wookiee that we know?
Do you know he's 200 years old?
I believe yeah.
That's insane.
Why?
Because,
why is that insane?
Because they don't treat him like he has any wisdom or anything.
He's still a co-pilot.
This is going back to the point of the bringing up the question. It's like, I don't think they give him respect.
Maybe he is always a co-pilot. Have we thought that like maybe his ambitions don't exceed that, you know? maybe Chewbacca's just like, I'm happy to be a co-pilot. I don't want the responsibility. You know what I mean? I'm good here.
So that pretty much it answers my question for me. He's never gonna get a standalone film that's all subtitled for us.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Well, I mean they tried.
He did get the Christmas special.
Yeah, I was gonna say they tried with the Christmas special.
You're right.
I mean, for him to have this job for 200, let's say he's doing this job for 100 years. He picks up this family maybe at age 170.
Yeah.
He just like left that family and he's hanging around Han Solo smuggling.
Well, it's also like how many Han Solos has he had? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah,
oh, like, I wondered in The Force Awakens, I wondered why he didn't seem more emotionally connected to Kylo. You know what I mean?
Because
my assumption, wrongfully so, my wife pointed out that this was kind of a silly assumption. My assumption was that when they weren't off in adventures, that Chewie like lived with them. So I was like, he grew up with this kid. Like he would know this kid. He'd love this kid. Like he'd be like,
Uncle that was Chewie. My assumption as well.
But then we looked up in a novel or something, they implied that he was off doing his own thing while they were having their family.
Novel is the new canon novel where is it one of the ones that was in the lead up The Force Awakens?
I believe so. Yeah. Like,
I'd love it if Chewie was just like the fun uncle, just like hanging out.
He lives above the garage. He's like Cody.
Right. Oh, man, I would love that.
He's like he's the Balky of the Solo family.
I don't know why they don't give him like the credit he deserves. I don't understand it.
Someday.
But like it would explain, like, you know how at the end of Force Awakens he like shoots Ben?
Yeah.
He shoots Kylo. I thought like, wow, would he really do that? Like, doesn't he love this kid? But he might be like, dude, is my fifth family that I've been involved in.
Or he's like,
I'll shoot all of them.
Or he's like, I had the spot above the garage, and then this kid happened and they kicked me out.
Now it's a playroom.
But I think there are theories online that the reason he kind of pulled his shot and shot him in the hip was because he does love Kylo.
Sure.
That's because he was drunk.
That's a whole other chapter. Poor Chewie. 200 years old.
All right, I want to bring up another question.
230. He looks good.
He does. He looks great.
C-3PO in the first film. Is this him at his least abrasive of all the movies?
Ooh.
He's in it the most of all the movies.
He is. But he doesn't have as many...
I don't find 3PO that abrasive.
Not at all
in
the whole
series? I mean,
he's
supposed to be abrasive.
Right. I think... But like, I mean, he's definitely... There's definitely a kind of like a Laurel and Hardy kind of thing happening very early on.
Yeah.
When they're wandering through the deserts. And bravo for this movie being called Star Wars. And we see a very small battle. And then it's just two robots on a desert arguing for 25 minutes.
I mean, even the title is playing into the magic of it because it implies something bigger outside of the movie.
Right, right.
Like, we don't see a war. We just kind of we know we're in one.
Right, exactly. What's the line that he says when the pod gets released and he's in the pod with R2 and they're like looking at the ship?
The damage doesn't look so bad from out here.
Yeah, for some reason that line gets me all the time. I don't know why. I think it's hilarious.
I mean, that has a poignancy in life. You know,
it does. Yeah, it does. It does. It's like outside perspective gives. I think it's a brilliant line, and I've only recently come to like love that line.
I think Sam alluded to in our first podcast about A New Hope how he thought the first 25 minutes of The Droids maybe didn't fit with what you were hoping for when you watched this movie because he had not always seen it from the beginning, I guess, when he was younger.
What were his expectations of coming?
I mean, I loved it. I love them together, Lost.
Yeah. I think it's great.
It's so much fun to me. I don't know, because I'm so infatuated with droids.
When we first see Luke, based on their, like, they are moving the story. So when we first see Luke, like, we move away from these two robots, you're like, thank God. And then all of a sudden we see Luke pop up, you're like, all right, we're here now. Like, we did the journey. We did the hard part. And now the story opens up.
It never seems like the hard part to me.
Yeah, I think it's kind of great.
Well, it's like, but I mean, you're like, hard relative to the movie. You're like, you're traveling through the desert. Like, where are these two robots going?
To me,
it does feel like you arrive, because that's when you start... the universe that's lived in and things like that. The movie gets, I wish I had a better term, but the movie gets cozier at that point.
Yeah, it's like, it's not hard to watch. I just mean it's like arduous for the characters to move through that desert to get to the point where you see everything.
That does bring me to the next thing I wanted to talk about, because obviously the version that's available to most people to watch Star Wars is the special edition. That's how I watched it again in this rewatch. You can find the despecialized editions online. And I think as diehard fans, we probably have access to it. I know I've watched it there and had been able to see them without all the alterations. But when you watch the films, do the special edition, does it hold up in any way? We know we don't want that extra scene with Han thrown in with Jabba. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought the rocks around R2-D2 early in the scene with Obi-Wan looked terrible. It just seemed to me that George had said he was waiting for the technology to be good enough to try some of these things. I don't think the technology was even good enough then because it didn't
look
quite right.
Yeah, I think he needed to wait another few years.
I think they were re-releasing them in theaters. I think it was a way to kind of re-energize some things. This movie has some good changes, but overall, I think the ones that are distracting are too distracting. The
too
good changes
do-backs.
Are, yeah, they really just made that model and like, let's put it everywhere we possibly can. I wonder also if it was like helping to tie together the visual look of Phantom Menace at that time. If they were trying to like kind of teach us to look at this stuff in a different way, like, here, we'll put this in a real environment and then maybe we could start taking other things away and you won't notice.
That's a good point.
But these are other things that like bothered people at the time that I was like blissfully unaware of.
Exactly. That's kind of the idea. Why
they were just
that?
Like, oh, there's new scenes.
Yeah.
I remember there was a special probably on ABC or something like that before A New Hope came out, and they were talking for like 20 minutes about how in the Jabba scene, Harrison Ford's finger like goes over Jabba.
Yeah.
And how much of an issue that was. And then like him walking on the tail, which still looks awful.
Yeah.
And then the line, you're a wonderful human being.
Oh yeah, because he was played by like a little Scotsman, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was like it was like a guy. Yeah. That the only feature I think that actually holds up. I also, Ryan, I remember watching that special because they like would do like the matte thing where they like pulled apart how they did it and like here's the final thing, a pixelated Jabba the Hutt crawling through. The only scene I think that works well is towards the end, the trench run, like the preparation for the trench run. That holds up for me because of the CG they did there.
Yeah, and there's some stuff that's pretty seamless in that.
And the Death Star explosion.
They added that ring.
They added the ring, and it does something that makes it not like, because it used to look smaller than a TIE fighter explosion.
Yeah,
and I don't know why that was. Like, it just like it didn't look as
the
big.
The explosion is like smaller than the Death Star in the original.
Right. Yeah, it's very. It's like it implodes.
Yeah, it's funny. Oh, Chris, I thought of you. This is a mild spoiler, but in Battlefront 2, on multiplayer, you could play as Slave 1.
Yes.
And you can put out the EMP charge.
Oh,
and it makes
awesome.
The noise. Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm into it. Sorry for
everyone. That was a little diatribe, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry for everyone that just listened to me say that. Also, I muted my mic while you were saying that.
We have to get Chris back again.
I do want to go back to what we were talking about with the prequels and how they impact this. When you watch the end of it and you watch Vader when he checks Obi-Wan's cloak with his foot after he is struck down Obi-Wan, if you think about the story from the prequels, it makes me kind of wonder, is he now in that moment thinking, oh, I wonder if the light side has a way to master death because his corpse has disappeared and he did say I'd be more possible than you could possibly imagine, or I'd be more powerful than you could possibly imagine. I'm just wondering because I just started to think of things a little bit differently because of watching the prequels again for the first time in 15 years.
Well, there you go.
There it is. No, it's justified. That's interesting is that at the end of Revenge, right? He says, we figured something out. Like there was a breakthrough in the Force.
I also, I'm laughing now because he checks it with his foot and it's like, what is he looking for? A trap door? Like, is he like,
wait a second. Hey, well, he's like,
hang on there.
Pretty cool. Does he disappear into the Force before he's hit by the lightsaber?
It looks that way kind of in the scene.
So do you think Obi-Wan has had this ability?
He could always decide when he was going to end his own life and become a Force spirit.
That'd or like possibly. He's gone into that world and come back out.
Oh.
Ooh, so you're saying he could come back and father a daughter?
Possible. It's possible.
At his age? He's not going to be contributing much.
Or just generating. Like maybe he could make Force people the same way Anakin was born.
So we've talked about the Keeper of the Holocron. We've talked about how much the story group now different than the prequels, pays attention to trying to make everything work together and be seamless. Do you think they just got lazy about the whole Obi-Wan doesn't remember R2-D2 and C-3PO? I don't understand how that was let slide.
I think he's being facetious. I read it that way. You guys don't read it that way?
Interesting.
No. Don't seem to remember ever owning a droid.
I think Alec Guinness is, whether he meant to or not, I think that his delivery has this kind of like glint of mischief in his eye. And I think that he's being a little facetious.
Okay. Sure. He's like, all don't seem to.
I can see that.
Or the fact that like maybe we are endeared to these droids because they're characters. But maybe in that reality, they treat them the same way I treat my Amazon Alexa. Or
and the way that Han treats all droids. Get out of the way, ball.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Right. That's the saddest thing you've ever said.
Maybe the reality of the movie.
I don't know if it's that they treat their droids like they're nothing or if you treat your Alexa like it's your best friend. But
maybe a little bit of both.
No, but like how many droids has he come across in his life? It's like Chewie. It's like Chewie with the families. It's like you're like the 15th droid that I have, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, oh, we updated. What'd you do with the old one? I don't know. It's in a box somewhere.
No, I think he says, like, I don't recall ever owning a droid. And then he gives R2 this, like, kind of knowing look, like, be cool, man.
I like that. I like that.
Hold it back on this one. Don't tell him.
Because he's always been in hiding around Luke Skywalker and didn't want to reveal.
And he also does, he does that the same thing that Yoda does. He's like, know him. He's me. Like, and then Yoda goes, like,
I'm him. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan
Kenobi. Yeah.
All right. I think we're getting to the point we can wrap up here. Our New Hope rewatch. We're gonna obviously do the next.
I just want to say, Sam had some thoughts. He said, Harrison Ford, no good, and he no good jackets.
No good jackets at all.
I'm just kidding. He didn't say that. He loves Harrison Ford and jackets.
It's a good way to tease
jackets. Yeah.
The new segment.
We missed you on this one, Sam. You love jackets.
Well, Sam's going to get his jacket segment next week because I think there's even a jacket in Battlefront that I thought was very impressive. Dell's jacket when he's part of the Rebellion, a nice bright red leather jacket. That seemed like something Sam would like.
We're talking about that in the house this weekend. It's whoever my wife said whoever makes the jackets, not necessarily the wardrobe department for the movies, but within the world of the movie, whoever makes jackets is a genius.
That's awesome. We have to have a solid episode on jackets in Star Wars because there's two lines. There's like a minute of film in The Force Awakens. It's like same jacket, old jacket, or like whatever. Like the line is.
New jacket.
They love the jackets. Here, take my jacket.
Yeah. Oh man. Han Solo just has like a Barbie style wardrobe somewhere. It's just like, oh, I got my cold jacket, I got my desert jacket, I got my woods jacket. It's all over the place.
Why don't they sell these jackets more regularly? Because I believe it was when Rogue One came out that Columbia released three different jackets that were worn by characters in Rogue One. They were very expensive, difficult to get, but why not have a Han Solo on Hoth jacket?
Oh my God, I was just about to say that. I would pay what they charge. Are you talking about the one he's wearing like in the base?
Yeah.
Blue or brown? Blue or brown? That's the question.
We'll get into the coolest jacket. It's so elegant.
Sam is really missing this out.
We'll get into this next week. He can talk about it on his Trek pod. We'll get into the blue-brown jacket conversation next week.
Because that will be our Empire Strikes Back podcast when we revisit The Empire Strikes Back as we are so close to The Last Jedi.
What is it going to be like, us talking about Empire Strikes Back?
Somewhat like this, a little bit more lighthearted than our usual deep dives.
Yeah.
Just a minute by minute, just like, that's the coolest.
Yeah. Yep.
That is going to do it for the droids you're looking for. We'll talk about Minox in our next podcast.
Check out the YouTube video, the gameplay.
These are the droids you're looking for. These are the droids you're looking for. These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.